Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Wheel Reads, a Wheel of Time podcast. Your hosts are Alan, Chris, and Ian. This podcast is safe for first-time readers with no spoilers. This week, we'll be covering the prologue of Crossroads of Twilight, Glimmers of the Pattern. Enjoy! Welcome, everyone, to Season 10, Episode 1. 10!
Full on 10.
Of The Wheel Reads. How's everyone doing tonight? Doing great.
Good.
Yeah. It's just Ian and me tonight, because Chris, I don't know if he has internet or not yet. He's at a new place. I think he has internet, but he hasn't set everything up. He's still unpacking. Lame.
But lame. Doing that life stuff.
I know, life. I hate moving, so I feel for him.
I don't envy him.
Yeah, Chris is soft. I don't know anything about that.
I'll only say that when I'm a few hundred miles away from him. But
let's see. What's going on as far as announcements go? 1 month away from JordanCon. Yay. We'll be there in a month. We'll be in Hotlanta. Fun times. I'm drinking some whiskey tonight, so that's some news, right? Some good Dead Rabbit Irish whiskey. Dead rabbits.
Noise.
Yeah, and this episode's brought to you by, let me see if I have the thing, NordVPN. Let's do NordVPN. Yeah, they have a new campaign starting on March 21st, which happens to be tomorrow when we're recording, running all the way through June 12th. And guess how much percent we're getting off if you sign 50. Up for it. More.
What? I was throwing out a big number. 75. Yeah.
69.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Perfect. Now's the time to sign up.
Now's the time to sign up. You get 69% off and 3 months free. And I'm not even joking about that. It's literally 69% off. I was like, did they make this ad for us?
Did they know?
Did they know?
Look.
Nice.
Yes, you got to give them a little money, but you're giving them something and you're getting something in return. It's kind of like a...
In return. It's great.
Yeah, both parties are benefiting at the same time.
It's a win-win. All right, guys.
Until someone passes gas.
This is the best ad placement ever. Our link for that will be in actually the podcast episode, not for the YouTube, but in the podcast episode, as well as you can find links to that on our website. If you just go to thewillreads.com, you can go to the bottom. There's a section for sponsors. You click on that. You'll have the affiliate link to get your 69 on or off.
Do it.
One or the other. Cool. Personal life. Yeah, lots happened. It's been like 2 weeks we've been off. So it's we celebrate St. Patty's Day, which was fun. That's why I have Irish whiskey right now. It's good stuff. Hey. Let's see. I started coaching both my kids in soccer last night. First time coaching. So I am now officially a soccer coach of a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. I have 8 kids on my team. Between my daughter and my son are the youngest and oldest on the team. So literally it is an entire team full of kids around four to six.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's fun.
You know, they surprised me. They actually did a really good job. So I was actually really surprised, by how well they took direction and actually to the point where I'm learning as a coach of kids where I'm not in a sport where I'm as familiar with, and maybe Ian can give me some tips on this. Like I come up with entire like lesson plan of drills to do that are appropriate for that age group. I went and did my research and like, I had like a whole list for like the first day. Cause I figured like it'd be very novice and we'd spend a lot of time on each one of these things and like how to do it. And most of these kids have actually already played before or have older siblings that play. So like,
okay,
we went through like the first drill and like I had like 10 minutes allotted for that. And like within like 2 minutes, they have it all down. I was like, all right, let's move to the next one. And then like in the practice, I'm like, do you guys want to play freeze tag? Cause I ran out of things to do. And, and I don't know enough about the sport to like just improvise. So you want to run around and play? Like, yeah. I was like, all right, go play. And like, meanwhile, the parents on the sideline, like, what is the coach doing? Like, don't worry about it. Just let him run around and have fun.
Yep. The best time filler is to split the team in half, mm-hmm. and have them scrimmage. You don't need a goal. Just play keep away. The intent is to maintain possession of the ball as long as possible. I
mean, with that age group, I thought it'd be
5 minutes or 20 minutes.
Yeah. I thought it'd be really tough because I was like, one of the drills I had them all, like they each had a soccer ball. I put it like in the middle of the field and had them all lined up on the sideline and they all lined up. And I was like, weird. And I was like, all right, when I say go, everybody run to your ball, get it. And just focus on ball control. It's not a race. Get your ball and dribble it back to me, you know, and don't try to be fast. Just try to get to the ball and try to keep control of your ball the entire way back. First time, bam, bam, right back. Dribble the ball back. I was like, you guys are ready to play.
I'm out of my league here. Well, in my first flag football practice that I coached, I had two kids the entire time stay on all fours, crawling around and growling at me like a bear.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, not nice.
Yeah. It was really good. Like, I was like, wow. Like, we had one shy kid, but she did great. By the end of the practice, she was in the mix. So, it was fun. I think next week we're going to team up with one of the other teams so we can do little scrimmages and stuff like that. Because they all practice at the same time in the same field. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. Cool. It is rewarding.
It is. It's fun. So,
yep. And especially so after you get through one game, you'll very easily be able to pick one or two things that, okay, my team definitely needs to work on
blank. Yeah.
And then, you know, you incorporate that in your practice. And if they do better in that in the next game, that's a victory, whether you win or not.
Yeah.
And trust me, I'm one of these people. I pay attention to the scoreboard. I don't care about the age group. Even when you're in the young group where they're like, we don't keep score, I keep score.
Yeah.
But still, when you're coaching the kids, it's not just the scoreboard. It's, hey, as a team, last week we struggled with this, and this week we did really well with it. So that's, that's still winning.
Yeah. Then I suggested playing freeze tag. I know how that works. And the kids started throwing out other games. I guess they play in their like kindergarten and like preschool. And they're like, yeah, let's play. Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, can you explain how the game works to me so I can explain to everyone else who doesn't know? And one kid's like, I don't know how to play that. I was like, neither do I.
But keep away. Remember that. You could fill an entire practice with keep away, and it's good conditioning too. Good.
All right. How about you? What's going on with you?
You know, there was the flag football, the growling bear.
Mm-hmm. But did you see the walking bear?
Yeah, I got... I got chewed out by a parent. And I think I'm just going to take it because, I'm on a mixed guys, girl team. Mm. And there was somebody that showed up to the practice and in this age group, I didn't anticipate this, but, they have transitioned. Although, if you're going by just traditional stereotypes and how people look, dressed, act, whatever, I thought I had one girl on the team, and somewhere in the practice I pointed out something good that he had done, and I said she, and oh my goodness, like he was not happy. And I looked and I was like, what's up? It's like, I'm a he. Why'd you say she? And I was like, oh, didn't know, sorry, my bad, you know. And I just thought we'd move on, and you know, I corrected myself for the rest of practice. But then afterward, like, the parent came up to me, was like, I overheard what was said and blah 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 blah. And we don't have to go down that rabbit hole, but like, I'll say this, you know, if you have something you prefer to be called, once you tell me, I'll do my best to do it because it doesn't bother me anyway. But if I slip up, and especially if I assume and you never mention anything to me, I don't know, have a little grace. I don't know. So I was just
When I met Eden in ninth grade, he had long hair, and like the reason we became friends is the whole first half of the year I was trying to date him because I didn't realize that
he was a dude. Gosh, he's cute. Then I started growing this beard out, and he's I don't know if I can get past the facial hair.
And then we went camping, and
right. So, anyways, there was that. I was going to engage in the conversation some, it wasn't just that there were other parents around, but there were other kids from the team around, and even you could hear their conversation. They were very confused and everything. And now I'm like, do I have a team meeting on this? I don't know.
Yeah.
So anyways, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Now, that being said,
sure.
He is has clearly played flag football before and understands football very well.
Good.
Should be a great addition to the team.
So he wasn't crawling around like a bear, ground at you.
No.
Okay.
No, other than that, that was one of my top, or he was one of my top players.
Nice.
There were three that have severe behavioral issues. Like, I don't think it's just like an ADD, ADH thing. Two of them, I mean, they got to be on the spectrum somewhere.
Yeah.
And then the one that started it that I think was egging the other two on, I think is just a bad freaking kid.
Yeah.
Like, there's no diagnosis. There's no bad kid. Yeah. And afterwards, like the dad, he came up to me sheepishly and was like, oh, you know, I'm really sorry. You know, hopefully he doesn't disrupt practice too much. And I mean, you could imagine, Alan, all the advice I wanted to give him, but I was like, nah, I'm coaching for the Y. I'll just be like, yeah, it's all good. It's not about winning. We're just here to have fun. Looks like he had a great time. What they're about to find out, though, we talked about this when I did basketball at the Y, everybody's supposed to get equal playing time. And I do.
I'm well. I'm playing in a church league, and same thing. And we're playing.
I start that way until you give me a reason to.
For my age group, 100%, we're doing that because it's 4 to 6 year old. So it's.
Oh yeah.
We're not. And I only have eight people on my team, and we're only fielding six, I think, at a time. So like, it's gonna be easy too.
Right. And in soccer, you're gonna need to swap the subs and give people rest.
And no one's gonna know what they're doing, so it's gonna be great. Just evenly, equal playing time. We'll figure it out.
Well, proud dad moment though.
Yeah.
So this is 7, 8 year old. Ronan's 8. So he's the older edge of this age group. And in my first practice, I just do a couple different skills things so I can watch and assess where they're at. Cause I have to put people in positions. I got to come up with plays that this team can do, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, there's another kid there, very athletic, and his dad is very close to the sideline watching. His dad is a beast. Okay. And every time Ronan takes off, and I don't even think he thinks he knows that Ronan is my son at this point. Every time Ronan takes off, I can hear him over there going, damn, that kid is fast. Look at the wheels on him. And no joke, Ronan was dusting people.
Yeah.
He's used to playing with his older brothers and his older brother friends, where in those groups, you know, he's the little teeny kid, but he went beast mode on him. But turns out this guy, we talk afterwards, and he still plays semi-pro ball. He was on a state championship team here in Richmond and played in college and everything.
Yeah.
So when he was hyping Ronan up, and I was like, yeah.
Similar story. My daughter got mad at me at some point during practice and decided to storm off the field because that's how she is. And I was trying to call her back because you're in this weird predicament because I'm assistant coach. And I'm like, kids, stay right here and go get her. Where the kid's like, maybe she's looking for a parent. And like, the kids didn't know that was my kid.
Right.
So I was like, I am her dad. Like, just stay here for a second.
Yeah.
She's wandering off. At that age, it's tough. She was upset because we were playing freestyle and she got tagged, and she's not used to playing group sports because she hasn't been out much with other kids, like a little bit, but like not in group sports.
She's really getting started.
Yeah. So she just doesn't understand the concept of it. So she's like, I didn't want to get tagged. I was like,
get back in there.
Get back in there. I don't have any sympathy for you right now. fun times. But yeah, so it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's gonna be a fun year.
Yeah. So, well, good. Take videos. This would be great. Yeah.
I'm coaching. I can't take videos. My wife will. So,
yeah. Okay. The best is if she get a video of like stuff on the field, just everything falling apart and it's a giant clusterfuck, and then pan over to you and you're just like, good job, team. This is proud of you all. Thomas, put your clothes back on. Yep. Yeah. We keep it on the whole game. All right. Everybody get your Capri Sun. What a game.
Yeah, get your orange slices of Capri Sun. We're good. All right, so are you ready for this monster of a prologue? You think it was long enough?
Do I chastise you now, or like, do you want me to wait?
You can bring it on now. It's not my fault.
Have I used up all my F-bombs already, or can I use some of them now?
We're far enough in.
Okay. So, fuck you, bro. Not bad. Like, so here's the thing. We took that break and it was a nice little side venture. And then coming back with a little bit of knowledge of what we've been given, like this book's going to be kind of a repeat of events, but different perspectives.
Eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. But then like in this prologue, it jumped around to a bunch of different things, and it's probably really good info that you need.
Kind of.
He's like, well, that's debatable. But truth be told, like by the time I got through the end of one point of view, I had barely just started to recognize who the fuck we were talking about. Like I felt fairly lost through most of it. So forgive me if a lot of tonight is Alan talking to me going, yeah, I kind of remember that.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll kind of recap it.
With Bashir towards the end, and I'm like, all right, making deals.
Yeah,
okay, here we go.
Yeah,
that's spicy.
Yeah, I mean, so we get a lot of point of views, and we're going through a lot of different people. And some new people, some old people, some people we haven't seen in a while because we ran into the book in between this. But we're back in the main story, for what it's worth, and we start out.
Am I the only one? Where with the Audible, it says opening credits, and the opening credits are 2.5 hours long, even though that's mostly the prologue.
It's all the prologue. It just the
but then it has a prologue chapter that's like another 30 minutes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's all
I did both of those. That's right.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. You got it. I think they ran out of time for a chapter length, and they're like, you guys.
Let's just roll it into.
Yeah. We'll make it two and call it opening credits and prologue. I don't know. It's long. It's like.
That's what she said.
It's like half the book. I mean,
so you're telling me we're almost done.
Yeah, we're almost done. I mean, literally, it's how many pages in? I mean, the prologue is 100 pages long.
Wow.
Literally, there are some novels that are not 100 pages. I guess YA novels. But anyway.
All I know is I remember you saying it was going to be long. So I was like, I'm going to go for a run. I'll do like 5 miles and I should be able to listen to it in this run. And that's why I messaged you earlier. I was like, am I looking at this right? Is it 2.5 plus, you know, another 30 minutes? You're like, yeah. I was like, I'm not running that long. My legs will fall off.
Yeah. So anyway, so prologue, Glimmers of the Pattern is what it's called. And we're in Rodell's Alderaan.
We're at the Alamo.
Yes. I can't ever pronounce his name right. Anyway, he's one of the great captains. With him and his companions.
He's all right. I don't know if he's great. He's okay.
We're with them. They're at an abandoned hunting lodge of Lady Osana's. Ildoradu has offered the white ribbon to various lords and various nations so they can come together and talk without fear of violence. So So it starts out, he's kind of setting this up where he's trying to gather all these different lords together.
And is he the one that's the little baby lion cub?
Him?
The little cubby lion?
Yeah, I think so.
Or little lion?
Little lion, yeah.
Yeah. So all this was kind of neat. It's interesting, and I don't know how much detail you want to pull out of this whole section, but I mean, we've seen this throughout history go both ways, where there is a dominant invading force.
Little wolf.
Yeah, that's what it said. Cute little baby all in his little wolf den. We've seen it go both ways in history where, you know, you got these smaller factions that, you know, they're kind of fighting amongst each other. And then a bigger, more powerful comes in. And then, you know, the smaller ones have a choice. And we've seen in history where they're like, no, we're still going to be selfish and, you know, fight each other. And then poof, they all get crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the step one is good. And under the banner of this white ribbon, they have the conversation of, look, these Shan Chan are some mofos. If we don't stand together, we're going to get our butts wiped. So we need to come together, fight them, and then we'll finish fighting each other when we're done. Like there wasn't and then maybe we'll see if we can establish a lasting peace.
Yeah.
I'm sure in this being proposed and even by the others agreeing to it, yes, they're all going to do what it takes to try and fend off the Shan Chan.
Yeah.
But it's going to be one of these sneaky scenarios where like towards the end, somebody made some deal with the Shan Chan or somebody made some shady deal, something. Cause they're still going to try and vie for that power when it's over.
Yeah.
And if they feel like the Shan Chan are just going to win no matter what, somebody's going to go to them and be like, okay, I'll give you the inside scoop on how to beat all these people. And I'll be like the governor of this area, but still serve the Shan Chan. So
right.
A lot of different trope paths this could go down, but that's the gist of it.
And he talks to all these different lords and everything like that about, you know, how they have to strike hard against the Shan Chan, that, you know, hey, we might not be able to beat them. Apparently, you know, they're force wielders. We might not stand a chance, but at least we're not going to lay over and just let them. He gives a kind of rousing not say yeah. speech, but yeah, it's kind of like a, yeah.
He had a good co-signer in there that was like, all right, I mean, it seems impossible, but if anybody can do it, it's this guy. So yeah. we should rally behind him.
Yeah.
And maybe he doesn't get the votes of confidence from everybody else without that. You know, I've talked, I don't know if I've talked about it on this show, but when we talk about leadership, you know, everybody talks about like a good, strong alpha, mm-hmm. but in the real world, the alpha can't be alpha without a really good beta. And that's not talked about enough. So even in this mm-hmm. scenario, just having somebody, and I don't know, maybe this was pre-planned to have this one person in on it already to co-sign, because yeah. that can be the tipping point, you know, of getting people to rally behind somebody.
Yeah. I actually went to a luncheon yesterday for a leadership luncheon. It was a former Navy SEAL that was gave a whole presentation about leadership and talked just a lot about his experience in the SEALs. And man, they go through a lot.
yeah.
Yeah, that's no joke. When I'm looking and I'm back, sure. like even when I was in my best shape in my life, I was like, I would have quit. Like, there's no way I would have made it through. Like,
I know a lot of people that I consider just human badasses that went through selection.
With your buds or whatever.
Well, for that, but also, you know, civil affairs, we have a selection mm-hmm. process, and it's not the same as Army Special Forces, but it's not right. wildly different. It's definitely designed to weed people out because, you know, we got to be able to operate small team, usually side yeah. by side with SF folks in very austere places. But there's people you wouldn't expect to make it through that do. And there's people that you're like, oh, they're a shoo-in. Yeah. They're definitely gonna make it, and absolutely don't. So yeah, it has nothing. It has something to do with your physical abilities.
A lot.
There's a lot of mental and not even intelligence.
I need my sleep. So, and that's when he got to like talking about Hell Week. I was like, dude, I would have made it. Like, because Hell Week, they don't let you sleep at all. You get 2 hours of sleep the entire week.
Yeah. When I was younger, sure. With my civil affairs, I was older when I went in. So I think even then that, you know, the instructors went a little easy on me. I think my skill set in other areas was good enough that
yeah,
they weren't as hard on me. But I would have loved to do that in my early 20s. Would have loved it.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, though. It was interesting. Yeah. He talked a lot about, like you're saying, having a second or having a team that everyone can be a leader in. That you do have a point guy, you do have an alpha, you do have a team leader, but you definitely, everyone needs to be a leader, because when literally shit hits the fan, he was talking about, he was talking about, I guess, one target they had to go on. They were going to kill an Al-Qaeda leader in Afghanistan, I think it was, and they're outside the village, and one of the team leaders, they have their night vision goggle up, and they're going in completely dark, and there was a hole outside the village where people just dump their shit. I mean, human waste. And the point guy's in front and disappears. And they run up or whatever, and he's up to his neck.
Yes.
full of excrement. And so they had to pull him out and continue on the mission, you know, and just talked about how even when things go to shit, you have to keep on going and have guys in charge. Fun times. Yeah, our Navy SEAL. Yeah, that's a good story about our Navy SEAL. Stepping into
Charlie Mike.
I'm sure he got hell for it. If I was on his squad, it would have been no.
Yeah, there's certain situations where you don't have time to go, oh no, my shoes. Like, you just got to keep on keeping on.
Yep. So yeah, talks to a bunch, you know, he makes an officer of truce to the Damanis, as long as they agree to fight the Shanchen with them. And this is what Rodel also tells the men, that the Shanchen can't be beaten. And he has a plan to do so, and gets into his little rah-rah thing. Talks about some of the other lords that are present there. It does point out that the Terrabonars are present, but they're not really quick to pledge their support.
Yeah, well, I mean, they say something at the end, and then what, our wolf guy, like, semi digs at him, like, hey, do you think you can make whatever this trek if you're dressed a certain way? I don't remember all the details, but it's a dig at them, because apparently there are groups of their people that have already signed up to or pledged themselves to the Shanchen. Mm-hmm. So they're like, F you, bro. And he's like, no, I mean it. Like, we're going to use that as part of our strategy. In fact, you know, some of my folks might come along with you to make this work. We're going to have like these small elements scattered all over an attack at once sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which could be true, or it could be him, you know, setting them up as Operation Human Shield, something like that. They could be the distraction while there's a real front somewhere else. But anyways, he lures them in.
Yeah. They're not the tip of the spear. They're the butt or the splinter on the side.
the leather strap towards the bottom where you get your grip. That's important too.
It's important too. Yeah. So that's all I got for this section before we switch over to Valda.
I'm surprised we spent that much time on it. I tried to rush it.
Yeah, there you go.
You realize it.
So even Valda, that showed the light, the white cloaks. Valda and some of the Turn of Lights have managed to escape the Shanshan, and they have pitched camp. This is where Valda speaks to Asunawa.
Should have had Zul on this week, buddy.
I should have had Zul on this week. Who has been living in an abandoned house next to the camp. Valda's the, I guess at this point, he's the head inquisitor, I guess. Or no, is he?
He's the inquisitor that everybody's like terrified of, but they also kind of respect at the same time. I remember them saying something like that.
Yeah. I think this is where because Valda takes control after Nile dies, right?
Sounds right.
Yeah, that's right. It's been a while.
Unsure, don't expect me to know.
He names himself Lord Captain Commander. So yeah, Valda is Lord Captain Commander at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't crazy about that. It was a couple books ago.
And is this the section where he was talking about like their missed opportunity with, where's Elaine from?
Elaine's from Caemlyn.
Andor. Yeah. Missed opportunity with Andor because he believes Merghaez is probably dead and blah, 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 blah. And he thinks that Glod's kind of a waste to hang on to because he's a good leader and that people like him, but good leaders from his perspective are generally not liked by the men.
With enough tame witches, he could drive Thor out of Andor, out of Ilion, everywhere. He settled like the shadow itself. He could be better than Hawkwing himself. Yeah.
Was that in the book or did you just make that up? Do you like him that much? Do we have like a Valda fan here?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, he's Lord Captain Commander. I knew that. I wasn't sure if it happened yet because it's like I said, it's been a while.
Right.
I knew he eventually does, and I didn't want to give anything away from me. And this is the problem with writing a podcast. And
are we now?
And blending in together, I'm like, but quote for fuck's sake. it's the problem with running a podcast and like not wanting to give away stuff and like how to start. Now we're getting to these chapters, at least this book. Crossroads of Twilight is one of those books. Like, I have no idea what actually happens in this book. I've read it 3 or 4 times now, and
Time frame of when things are happening, I'm sure that would be confusing. Yeah. It already is for me.
So, like, I know all the prologues are like that. All these guys end up, and I know where they all begin. And this part, I'm like, are we there yet? I don't want to give anything away yet. So.
To Wadaholic Aussie's point, even in here, when they talk about the Shanshan, he makes it a point to express his interest in how the Shanshan are able to control the channelers. Yeah. He's like, I'd like to figure that out and get my hands on it. So that's clearly something that's at the forefront of his mind.
Yeah.
And not great for those that we call our heroes. I mean, he's in a position of power with a ton of people under him that even though they're not channelers, they are quite capable. So if he made it his mission to capture some of these and figure out the secrets and figure out if they could find a way to use it themselves, like he could do it. So something we got to watch out for.
Zula wants to know why we are recording on Wednesdays.
Because none of us have any control over our lives anymore.
Yeah, because our lives are in a complete downward spiral right now, and we're just trying to make do with what we can, all right?
Right.
That's the
joke answer, but also not. It's kind of sprinkle of reality on there.
So,
the best we can.
During this conversation, they talk about Andor. They argue that Mirendi is not a good place for them to be at the moment, that there's an Andorian army in the country nearby, and that, which they are confused, I guess, with the Saldarian army, because they don't want to, like, as those one of them, or Asunawa suggests that they go to Saladar, and Valdo's like, no, there's a whole Aes Sedai, the whole army there. And they don't put two and two together because the army's marching towards White Tower. So they don't put the two together. I'm pretty sure it's the same army because it's led by Gareth Bryn. So confused. They are confused. And they ultimately.
How is it now? I know the Aes Sedai are good with their secrets, but how is it not the biggest news everywhere that there is a split in the tower? Enough is going on. Enough people have seen, overheard. By now, I would think the spies, especially within the White Cloaks, they got to have their informants too.
Yeah, but you also think about, like, we live in an age of instant communication everywhere in the world.
They have pigeons.
Okay.
Pigeons, S with an S. They can fly everywhere. Yeah. And think about it this way. The White Cloaks aren't dumb. It's not like, them Tarvalon witches is our enemy, and so you just completely separate yourselves from them. I'm certain the White Cloaks have got to have people that are working as servants in the White Tower. Why would they not? They'd be fools not to. So, and maybe that answers my question. Maybe on this particular topic, they've been a little foolish and too standoffish. Like,
them, you know, witches.
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer is not just a fun cliche to say. Like, if they're truly your enemy, if you know they want to do you harm, they're actively pursuing to harm you, then you've got to be in the know.
That's why I invited you on this podcast.
Yeah, he's keeping me close. Yeah, what are you up to? You in Richmond tonight? Okay, good. That's a safe distance.
Oh, yeah. We saw Dune 2 together. We did go on a little mandate.
Yeah. We broed it up.
We brought it up. So that was fun. I forgot to mention that. That's like everything kind of messed together. That was like last week, but it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And if y'all haven't seen, part two, not really Dune part two. Right. If you haven't seen it, it's fantastic. Oh my gosh. It's so good.
It was fun.
And on that note, Meredith's son, Evan, who's 9, he's been getting into sci-fi fantasy a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him about it and he seemed kind of interested, but there's really no opportunity for him and I to sit down and watch it. And then he stayed homesick from school one day. Meredith had to go to work and I was teleworking. So I was like, oh, perfect opportunity. We watched Dune, streamed it, and he loved it. Nice. Like it was, I hope to have this. I had this experience with my older kids when it came to like Star Wars, but they didn't go like full into the fantasy realm like I did. Yeah. River might still, but Evan really loves it. So I remember I had to go upstairs and answer an email for work. And as I'm coming down, I look over on the couch and, you know, we have it up to like max volume with the surround sound and everything. And he's just buried in the blankets, like eyes big as day, like hits pause and looks at me and just goes, This is amazing. I was like, yes. So anyways, it was a wonderful connection.
Awesome.
And with Alan and I going to the movie theater, this is probably the 5,673rd time people have thought we were a gay couple sneaking away from our wives to go do gay dude stuff.
Yeah, Ian showed up in sweats and like a hoodie, and I showed up in a business suit. It was fantastic.
And we went to a uncrowded movie theater for like a daytime showing. We were sneaking away.
He looks at us and kind of just like, huh?
We're bickering like an old couple. And
anyway. we shared about one thing of popcorn to share.
One big thing of popcorn. I forgot. That's what sealed the deal.
It was a special deal.
The guy was at the counter. He's like, y'all just want to split one? Or do you need two? Or do you want to split one? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's save cheaper. A buck. We'll split one. Split one. We'll split one, honey. I mean, Alan.
It was great. It's fantastic. So just going to Altara, where the Saladar is, and Valdo's like, nope, we do have to ultimately destroy those witches, but right now we're going different ways. And the conversation ends because Asunawa has to go. He's called to a meeting with the Council of the Anointed. So,
yeah. Good stuff here.
Yeah. Anything else from that before we switch to Gabrielle's point of view? Gabby?
I guess maybe it should give us a little bit of worry for Galad, because he is thinking out loud that Galad's really of no, it's not even that he's of no use to him anymore, but he's kind of a dangerous leader to keep around if he doesn't have this additional benefit.
Sure.
So it's like the troops like him a little too much. You know, that's not a good sign. So
twirly mustache.
Right.
Yeah.
So we switch to Gabby's point of view, Connor Gabby. So it's Gabby, Tovin, and Loghain. And they're all enjoying a nice little ride together. You know, Loghain with
little
his
saunter.
Little saunter. Because both of them are bonded to Loghain. They're, I guess, not warders. I don't know. What are we have a name that we're calling them yet? I don't know if the book's given them a name yet. Do we have a name? The side that are bonded? It's the warder bond. Anyway, so.
Yeah.
Gabrielle is thinking about herself, how, you know, the odd parts about the warder bond, especially being on the wrong end of it and being a brown and never having a warder for herself. She's just fascinated by all of it. And of course, being brown.
She has nothing to compare it to, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And she wonders to herself, the Oshawan have failed to command their bonded Aes Sedai, not to harm the Black Tower, given that the sisters came to destroy it. You know, are they making those commands? And they start thinking about how that bond works and how, you know, Aes Sedai usually don't command their warders like that, but, you know, the Oshawan might and blah, blah, blah. You know, just think about all the different aspects.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Wardette. There you go.
The Wardettes.
The Wardettes. Yeah.
Is this the part where she's also talking about how, for the most part, Loghain has his feelings and everything masked, so she can't really get much from him, but sometimes like when they're snuggling at night, he lets it down and it's like utter chaos what she feels, and
and she's also just amazed that Tovin is being so nice to Loghain because she's a red. And
so I gotta go back to what I was saying. I couldn't help but think when I was listening to that part, like, remember when the girls all bonded with Rand? Mm-hmm. And when I was talking about that, like, that was a pretty powerful moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these memes and videos, like, you know, the joke between the sexes and men and women and relationships and everything. And, you know, girls are, you know, girls typically are the ones like, you never tell me what you're thinking and what you feel. Share with me what you feel. And like, maybe not all, but I think some of the guys out there, you might agree with this. There's a lot of times where they're telling you that, and in your mind, you're like, you don't want to know.
Yeah.
You don't want to know.
Either that or it is actually nothing. They don't believe that you can actually have nothing in your head. And that's a trait that
I'm not able to do nothing in my head, but I do know some people swear they can. So that's possible too.
Yeah.
But there are burdens that I bear so that, you know, my kids and those that I love don't have to. So like, I don't, it's not that I want to be deceitful and not sharing everything with you, but there's a lot of stuff that I've just committed to working out myself because, I mean, what was I going to do? Just add stress to you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you don't want to know.
Now, normally,
you say you want to know, but you don't want to know.
Normally with me, it's something completely off the wall. And my wife's quit asking me that question because she'll get a 30-minute either history or random trivia lecture because that's what I'm thinking about. Like, what do you think about right now? I was like, so if Constantinople fell in 1453 and Columbus sailed the ocean, that's only 40 years difference. Like, can you believe that Constantinople fell within 40 years of Columbus sailed across the land? She's like, never mind. I'm sorry I asked.
There were people that were alive. There were people that were alive for both events.
She's like, I'm sorry I asked. It's just like, I'm like, yeah, in the same year was the end of the 100-year war with Joan of Arc. Like, the same exact year it ended. I mean, Joan of Arc was the beginning of the war, but still, like, it's all the same time period. Like, you think about these things hundreds apart, and I start going this long rabbit hole down, and she's like, never mind. I don't tell me what you're thinking anymore. Okay.
Yeah. It just makes me wonder if we're going to experience a bonding moment between any man and woman where the woman gets to, like, have insight into thoughts and feelings of the man, and she goes, oh, this is neat. Yeah, cool. Yeah, you got a pretty groovy life going on here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that's going to happen. So far, it's all been, oh gosh. Oh, boy. Whew. This. Even Moraine, like, felt relief. Like, oh, you're broken too? Okay, this might work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anywho.
So what do you think about Tovin not being, because she had this passion of hated men who could channel, and now she's buddy-buddy with Loghain. Do you think it's an act, or do you think she's just like coming around to actually not being as a man hater, man eater.
Hard to say, not enough information. And truly, we still don't know enough about the bond. Mm-hmm. There might be something about that bond where you literally, instead of two separate entities that could just communicate, mm-hmm. like there's actual overlap and there's part of you that becomes them and part of them that mm-hmm. becomes you. So and yeah. if you were a red Aes Sedai and you hated yourself a lot and you hated them right. and you were bonded with them and part of you and them overlap, as long as you hate yourself enough, you could probably continue to hate them.
Yeah.
But if the bond is strong enough and you have a strong enough love for yourself, then I would think eventually, you know, for selfish reasons.
Yeah. I think also with the bond, like being able to actually put, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, cause they can feel the feelings.
It's not the reason behind the behavior.
Yeah. Not necessarily empathy. Maybe empathy is the right word, but more like understanding. And whereas it's really easy to grow up like, and you see this a lot, like in, I hate to say it, like in deep Southern communities and things like where like hatred is taught, and you can see not just America, but in other parts of the world as well, whether it's Shiite Muslims, yep. or you can
the Hutus and the Tutsis and
Hutus and the Tutsis. You grow up in this preconceived, but once the bond makes you actually feel emotion and humanize it, I think, and that might have something to do with it as well. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud, but
sure.
Yeah. So here Tovain actually teases Gabriel about the relationship with Loghain, causing Gabriel to blush, lose her cool a little bit. Yeah. Kind of a cringy moment. Yeah. Because they share beds, which is
giggity.
Yeah. Kind of. I don't know if that's giggity.
Loghain seems like a stud.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're
in my mind.
They're kind of forced into this whole situationship. So it's kind of a, what do we call it? Stockholm. It's a, I don't know. It's
marriage.
It's gross. But of course, this only amuses Loghain as they're doing this little bickering. The three of them are interrupted in the arrival of a tall Misharel, the Asherman loyal to Taim. Of course, Loghain's not loyal to Taim, so he's Loghain
ready to throw down.
Yeah, that Taim has given Loghain permission to go out recruiting more men to train for the Black Tower. And Misharel doesn't understand why Loghain wants to go. Yeah.
This one's simple. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Loghain is not lockstep in line with what the Ashaman are trying to do under Taim, then he can't stay right there. But also, even if his loyalties are nowhere else, he doesn't want to be off by himself right now. It's dangerous for a man like him. And we're starting to get different vibes from Loghain. Like, he's not just this evil, crazy man. He has certain principles. He was good and kind to Morghese and that company to a certain extent. So where do Loghain's loyalties truly lie right now? Mm-hmm. It's possible he could be committed to helping Rand. It's possible maybe he's decided, I don't care about the big picture stuff anymore. I'm going to do what I can for Morghese. We don't know, but he's not going to accomplish any of his goals staying under the thumb of Taim. So this recruiting thing is, I mean, just opens doors for him. He could travel more freely, talk to a bunch of people.
Whatever it is. To get Loghain away from the Black Tower, though? Like, just get him away?
Yeah, Loghain doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, but Taim doesn't want him there either, probably.
Taim,
motivation on that side?
Sure. Taim is another reason why we knew ahead of time, like, he's just a bad dude. Threatened by any sort of power that might rival his.
Yeah. Yeah, we see that with Rand. I mean, he gets
big time.
Yeah.
Big time. Mm-hmm. So somebody like Loghain coming in, no. If he could find a way to kill him without losing followers, he would.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Tovain and Gabriel agree that they must see to accompany Loghain when he goes recruiting. That's kind of how we end this section.
Yeah.
Yeah. We switch to your Kiri's point of view. I think this might be the first time we hear a few Kiri. I think No, Yukari was mentioned in the Path of Daggers.
Who's Yukari? Fill me in. Remind me.
She's an Aes Sedai, the sitter of the Grey Aja. Who's loyal?
Oh, are we back in the tower here?
Yeah, we're back in the tower here.
Okay. And not a Dark Friend Grey. She's part of the team that's trying to figure out who the Dark Friends are?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. You got it.
Yeah.
So Yukari and Miller are walking through the tower, exchanging information, trying to root out the Black Aja. They're followed by Midani's warder, Leonin. They're talking and is interrupted when they cross paths with three brown sisters, Maris Thornhill and Doris Messianos. Anyway, yeah. Maris Thornhill, Doris Messianos, and Ellen Worrell.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. There's all these Aes Sedai. There's going to be quizzes at the very end.
The way you're taking your time to trying to pronounce them correctly, I don't know if you're trying to show off to the listeners or if this is a hint to me that I should have been paying attention.
Aes Sedai number one, Aes Sedai number two, Aes Sedai number three, all brown. Right. Show up.
We talk about this, but this is definitely this prologue.
Name salad time.
Right. This is one of those situations where instead of trying to figure it out, I would just make up a name for each person in my head. Like there was a Ted, there was a Sammy.
Yeah.
You know, one was Lucifer just because I didn't like her.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't try with the real names.
Yeah. So Aes Sedai number one pretends to ask Yuri about the Air Felon law about fishing rights. And again, some glares from the Browns. They keep walking past. So, you know, they're trying to keep sneaky, not be suspicious.
Yeah. They talk about it's so funny. Like, they're like, well, we can't put up a ward against eavesdropping because that's a red flag. Because then everybody's mm-hmm. be like, well, they're talking about something private. And mm-hmm. then you add to it who's talking to who, like everybody is going to know that something's up.
Yeah.
But also, as you go through this section, there's a lot of people that are out and about. We've heard previously that all the old rules in the tower of who talks to who and everything, it's been kind of falling apart anyways. There's been overlap between the Ajas.
Yeah.
Even with the, you know, overthrow of the Amerlin, there were factions that changed and partnerships that changed. So anyways,
yeah.
They're still trying to be sneaky and uppity at the same time. But like anybody that's sitting back and watching any of this unfold over the last couple of years knows that everything's shady.
I got a clip, actually, of what's happening right now.
Don't be suspicious. 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 Don't be suspicious.
That's how they're walking out of the tower.
Oh, yeah? What movie did you watch? Chicken Run. What's it about? Well, the chicken was running.
You're grounded.
Running chicken. You're grounded. Everybody else go home.
That was a fun conversation with my dad. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, memories. It's okay. Yeah, so back in high school, story time. So back in high school, Ian and I decided to go do something crazy. I don't know, probably go smoke pot or something. I don't know what we're doing. Probably something bad.
Shenanigans.
And I told my parents I'm going to my friend Dave's house, and that we're going to watch Chicken Run. And my dad got immediately suspicious. He's like, one, why are you watching a kid's movie? And two, how does Dave have it still in theaters? My dad knew that much about it. I was like, oh, well, this is back early days where you could download movies illegally. And my dad had no idea what that was. And I was like, well, and Dave actually did do that all the time.
Which is true. We saw everything before it hit
everything
theaters.
Before theaters. Yeah. Anyway, so we're like, yeah, Dave has a way of downloading it. We're just going to watch his computer. Well, my dad goes and drives past Dave's house and sees my car's not there. So I didn't know this. My dad actually had gone to take my little brother to see Chicken Run the weekend before.
So he was familiar with the movie.
So he's familiar with the movie. So he asked me how the movie was when I got home. And I said, oh, yeah, it was good. He's like, what was it about? It's like chickens running.
Some a little quicker than I anticipated.
Yeah. There's
some slower.
Kind of fast. And, yeah. Hmm.
And the good guy won in the end, though. You're grounded.
Yeah. anyway, yeah. So chickens running. They resume talk about the Black Aja. And their talk just keeps on getting interrupted as servants walk by and other Aes Sedai. And it's like a very broken conversation about Black Aja.
Yeah.
Yep.
And wasn't there some suspicion, or at least considering if Elida was, you know, they didn't have any proof or anything, but there, at least one of them was thinking, well, what if, like, oh,
that'd I mean, yeah. Yukiri asks, Medeni, remembers that Medeni and Elida were good friends and novices. And at this point, like, you know, ask her to renew her friendship with Elida to try to get some insight on that.
Right. All right.
But she's like, yeah, I already tried, but Alviarin won't even let me see her. So yeah, not going to happen.
Oh, and then there was some mention about how, like, anybody Elida ever mentored or whatever, like, hated her or something. Mm-hmm. I might be messing that up.
Yeah.
I meant to go back like over that part. You know, definitely made me think of Elida getting Moraine and Swan ready for the testing and everything.
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, Elida turns out to, like, just straight up be a good guy in the end of the story. And you just, it's kind of like that Snape thing. Like, you assume they're the bad person, but if you know, once you see the end, if you go back and watch everything they did, you're like, oh no, they were trying to help the whole time, just in a kind of misguided way.
It's like Karate Kid.
People don't understand.
It's like Karate Kid.
Yeah. The Karate Kid was the bad guy.
It was the bad guy.
100%. Shows up, just starts beating people up.
Yeah, it tries to take, like, the dude's girl, like, and just is like, and then the guy's like, dude, what are you doing? And he just, like, kicks the guy, sucker punches him, like, come on, dude, like, what are you doing?
Messed up.
Yeah. Rafo Ian. Motherfucking.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So keep getting interrupted. Let's see, where are we? They get interrupted by CN, and your Curie's not happy to see CN out of her apartments because CN had been ordered to stay because she might be targeted to be killed by the Black Aja.
Nobody's listening to me.
No one's listening to anything I say. Yep.
Stop trying to do everything in secret. That's why it's getting complicated.
Yeah. And CN's like, I'm safe. I got this, Mom.
Do what I want.
Yeah. And you hear like, speak to my office. We got to talk.
Yeah.
So the next scene, they go into private. CN tells her that, you know, she's worked out some strange patterns and how the objects are replacing the sitters who joined the rebels.
Yeah. How many were there? This many from every Aja, and then there was two from the Brown, and blah, blah, blah. Who's on first? I kind of skipped through this part. Like, I knew it was important, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to think about it hard enough to understand what she was getting at, other than it's suspicious.
It's suspicious. Everything's suspicious.
And they didn't follow traditional processes.
Yeah, because
none of them were people that they expected. So it makes them go, oh. But then here's the thing. At the time it happened, why weren't people suspicious? When you consider the attitudes of the Aes Sedai, and there's all this tradition, and this is the way things are, and blah, blah, blah. When something goes against the grain of that, it would have been a bigger deal then.
Right.
Unless everybody was duped and under some magical power to just accept it, like, oh, I guess this is the way it has to be.
Yeah.
So different than anything we've ever done, but we're going to be okay with it for a while. And then we're going to magically just randomly think about it on this casual walk.
Yeah.
But I like this so far.
Yeah. But then again, there's a lot of turmoil and a lot of upheaval and a lot of confusion in general going on in the tower in general. So kind of leads to this being kind of brushed under the rug, even though it is kind of a big thing. I don't know. Mismanagement.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't buy it. In a group of that size, you're gonna have people that are, there's always gonna be people in the group that are actually principled and not conniving behind the scenes. You're gonna have somebody that stands up and says, what the fuck are we doing? Absolutely not. No. Yeah,
the goody two shoes that always, like, do the right thing no matter what, and you just want to go and hit them.
I don't know if it's goody two shoes. Like, I've had those moments in my life where I feel like the group as a whole has crossed a line where like,
it's like when you're at the casino,
and I'll stand up for it.
It's like at the casino and, like, you give, like, the blackjack dealer, like, $200 for chips, and he hands you $400, and the guy next to him goes, hey, you gave him the wrong amount. You're like, shut up.
Mother trucker.
Like, I'm not trying to rob the casino, but if they screwed up, they screwed up. Don't tell them they screwed up. Yeah, there's always that guy that's there that's going to, like, point out, like, hey,
point of order.
They're not supposed to be doing that. Yeah.
Anyways,
don't be those people, guys. Don't be.
We're just accepting that everything was in so much turmoil when it all went down. That's we're gonna go with that.
Maybe they just noticed, but they just get stitches and they just all keep silent.
Yeah. It would have been better if instead of a aha moment when this person expressed the issues that she had, it was more like, and when it happened, like I was like, what's going on? But since everybody else was going along with it, I guess I kind of get too, but they made it more like an aha moment. Like we're just now thinking of it. And that's where it just didn't seem realistic to me.
Yeah.
But whatever. Yeah. Either way, here we are.
Here we are. And here we end this section. So anything else from the White Tower before we switch to go on?
Let's switch to the Alan section.
Still? Yep. I am not him.
Yep. I'll never get over when we first met him and he just started spouting off random facts and telling people what he knows about wacky tobacco and
the
culture of the southernmost part of their kingdom that doesn't really know they're part of their kingdom. Yeah. That would be Alan.
It would be me. Just spat off random facts.
On your sailor on the world thing, like I could just picture you getting off the boat and some like cannibalistic tribe pops out of the woods with their arrows pointing at you and you just going, oh neat, it's one of these islands where you eat people like me that accidentally land on your runs back to the boat.
We did go to some tribal islands when I was sailing on the world. It was fun. But it was they weren't cannibals as far as I know. At least they try to eat us. We mapped out where those were. One of the best moments of the podcast when he called out. Shut up. Don't sticks. Feed him. Stop feeding him.
That's gonna start being my favorite character for the rest of this podcast.
All right. So Gawain is still in the village of Dorlin with the tower, Aes Sedai, who managed to escape from Dumai Wells. His first lieutenant, Rajar, tells him that the Aes Sedai have come to the village to asking for the sister in charge. Gawain regrets not having left before the winter snows, and he feels like he needs to be in Camelin with Elaine.
Yeah, this whole section, not that I'm trying to rush through the whole thing tonight, but this section, it's pretty quick. What we're seeing is he's still torn on where his allegiance is supposed to be. To simplify it for him, instead of rallying behind a cause, which is kind of what he initially did in defending the tower during the coup or whatever it was. But he just decided, I'm going to just simplify it and I'm just going to put my chips behind my sister Elaine and behind Egwene.
Yeah.
And I'll just follow them wherever. So, yeah.
Yep. Pretty much.
That's that. And now he's got to play the game, whatever's dealt to him, and until he gets an opportunity to act on that.
Yeah. You remember some of this entire section up pretty nicely.
That's it. Yeah. And then Alan took a nap.
And took a nap. Yep.
Because he was late tired.
He was late tired. So thank you. Thank you for summarizing that section. Let's move on. Yep. Nothing else to really talk about there. Then we get to Davrin Bashir. Now we get some good
or do we
are Dewey? Dewey what this
I don't
is
know.
Yeah, this is Davrin Bashir. Yeah, and Bale, and they're observing the camp.
I'm thinking of a different section.
Okay. Yeah. They're observing the camp. They can't figure out how Aramilla got support from these other two people that were there. Bale complains to Aramilla that her cohorts are ignoring them. He seems insulted by this, as his Aiel would crush them before sunset. And Bashir reminds Bail that Elaine would not like that very much, especially because they're both outlanders, that we need to keep the peace. Like, yes, I know you just want to kill as an Aiel, but we're here on a diplomatic mission from Andor. And,
can I tell you what never works in all of human history?
What?
Taking war fighters and asking them to be peacemakers. Somebody who's trained to fight war with their hands, knife, blade, gun, tank, combatants, trained for combat. It's not that they don't want peace. It's not like they're all just jughead psycho, let's murder everything, I just want to rage and kill. Some of them do it for, you know, their end game being peace as well, but they don't do well just holding ground and just maintaining peace. That is a recipe for disaster. Yeah. It's never worked.
Yeah. Never. Yeah, I guess you're right.
We've faked it for a little bit, but everything was falling apart behind the scenes and diplomatic efforts were falling apart. But we did a good job in the media of saying that. No, no, it's great. Nothing to see here.
All right. Anybody in chat that's CIA, raise your hands. Okay, cool. All right. That's our entire country, dude.
Yeah. Hey, hey, heavy combat brigade. I want you to hold this space and be peacemakers. Do you realize the amount of money you spent to train us to destroy large swaths of land and people? Yeah. Peacemakers. Man, we'll give it a try. Fuck it. Hey, you fucker, come here. Hey, cut that shit out. That was the president of their country. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, so also Bail and Bashir observe the Queen's Guard coming to save some refugees who have been stopped and searched by horsemen, probably loyal to Aramilla. When no fighting breaks out, Bail decides it might be better just to leave and not stay here. He's like, all right, this is my chance. They're going to fight. Yeah. Oh, wait, they did this peacefully. Maybe I should just leave.
That's lame. I don't understand any of this. I don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah, so they decided to go return back to the city.
In the city.
Tumad, who commands Bashir's escort, agrees with Violet that Aramilla's forces are mocking them. So, I mean, just basically goes through like what you're saying. Like, you'll just want to put everybody in their place. And Bashir's trying to play the more diplomatic approach. Like, I know they're kind of our enemy, but they're not really our enemy. And we do peaceful transitions here. We don't just kill people and take over here. So I know it's strange, but just calm down.
We might learn something about the IO moving forward that negates this, but so far there's nothing that speaks to the IEL seeing things in shades of gray. Everything's very black and white for them. It's not that they don't have a sophisticated culture. It's that everything fits into a category.
Right.
Either this or that, it is or isn't. And depending on who you are or what the decision is or what you do, like, there's an expected result for that, or there's a appropriate reaction to that. There's not a lot of gray area.
There's no try
culture.
You do or do not. Yoda taught me that.
Here you go, dropping more facts.
Dropping facts. All right. when Bashir drives back a camp, he notices a cluster of women have gathered in the center of the camp. When he enters the tent, he finds his wife has injured her left arm. She tells him that two strange men had ransacked their tent.
Now, this story is great. Mm-hmm. She might get a favorite character just because of how she tells this story. And it's not exciting. It's not special effects, but very nonchalantly like, well, so like these dudes showed up that were like trying to kill me. So obviously I lashed out and whooped their ass. Like, so we'll skip that part because that's the obvious part, right, honey? And I got a little nick on my arm. No biggie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
Lightly stabbed.
Yeah. The two men then fled. Adira has ordered a search for the men. And they suggest that Bashir withdraw while she sews up Adira. It basically debates her. It's like, yeah, you should go ahead and leave while I finish stitching her up.
Yeah. Anyways, I thought it was great.
Yeah. At this point, Tumad tells Bashir that two men have been found. Each one had a blade thrust through the base of their skulls.
Hmm.
Yeah.
They had it coming. Yeah. They had it coming. They had it coming.
And Bashir sends Tumad to find a man who came to visit him and tell him that he has agreed, but it's unclear what he's talking about and what he's agreeing to. Just like, hey, go find this dude.
Yeah. And
tell him.
Do we know what that was? I paused there to try and think, but
it doesn't say.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was missing something.
It's meant to be vague.
I think I even did a little rewind to see if I missed something. But.
Yeah. It's meant to be fake. She's been lightly stabbed. It's only a flesh wound. Dira, what a woman. Oh, yeah. She's, the Saldane woman, like Fail is described, they're very feisty and very capable. So,
yeah. When you don't go in a scenario like that and be like, oh, my love, oh, dear, you've been cut. da-da-da-da-da, they'd be like, bro, first of all, you should see the other dude. Secondly, I can handle my own stuff.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready for a dope brain section?
This is what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. This is the final section.
Is he is or is he isn't?
Is he is or is he isn't? So Sumitsu is talking to Shishelle about various matters as Catswain's there, as matters as Catswain has departed to Kyrian and left Sumitsu in charge. So Catswain's gone. Sumitsu's in charge. Sumitsu doesn't like meeting with Shashil. And I'm sorry I'm pronouncing all these S names wrong because there's a million different S name Aes Sedais and I don't understand.
Take another sip of whiskey. It'll help.
S number two said to S number three that S number four.
Yeah.
And S number five, no, you didn't. Yeah. So she does. Yeah. And she doesn't understand how a red could swear fealty to any man, much less the Dragon Reborn. Shashil asks Sumitsu if Adlin Retin can claim the high seat of the House of Retin, since Torm has disappeared. All this stuff's kind of going on. Torm, yeah, they're not sure if Torm's actually died. And while all this is talking on, they're also, this is where we get Loial too. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all of that happens Loial before the part.
Finally coming up.
Yep.
Yeah. RJ really loves the letter S.
What's Loial's cover name here?
I can't remember. Sumitsu wants to go to Loial.
Because he's hanging out with the Ashaman dude.
Yeah.
I guess they're coming back from the mission that Rand sent him on and they're trying to get to Rand and let him know that they did as best they could.
It's so big of a prologue that like trying to.
No, it's all good. No. Not that important. So he has a bit of a cover story.
Yeah.
But the Aes Sedai kind of flush it out. Like
he's looking for Ogier stonemasons. And yeah. When they arrive in the kitchen, the Ogier and a young man are surrounded by kitchen staff. Ogier is telling stories of his travels, which is Loial. And Sumitsu kind of like plays into it. She's like, so I've heard there's an Ogier that's friends of Rand.
He's like, oh, that's interesting. I gotta go.
Yeah.
I was just leaving.
Yeah. And she's correctly guessed that it's Loial. Yeah. So I think Sumitsu figures it out.
Master Ladar.
Ladar. Thank you.
Yeah. Sounds right. Thank you.
That sounds right. Yeah. 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 And Loial's like, yep. I gotta go.
This reminds me of the time I got called to the first sergeant's office like early on like a Saturday or Sunday morning after a night of extensive partying whilst in Germany. So I was still wearing what I wore the night before. Mm-hmm. The runner came, was like, hey, first sergeant would see you. And I was like, all right, let me change. He's like, no, he said, come right now. I'm like, okay, go to first sergeant's office. Two other guys are there, also guys that were out with me the night before. And he pulls up the blotter report, which is just the report of like all the things that got reported the night before. Mm-hmm. And it gets to apparently this one guy. So we were in Schweinfurt, pig town. There were like big statues of pigs everywhere and different businesses would have pigs out that they would decorate differently or whatever. He's reading this report of this guy that's like riding all the pigs and hollering at people walking by, swimming naked in fountains, picking fights with people, like all this other stuff. He's like, you know anything about it? I was like, oh, for sure. And I don't think I ran into him. And then he goes, well, they never really stopped the guy to get his name, but we have a description. And he reads it off and he's like, about 5'7", 5'8", in a long sleeve rugby shirt, purple with a yellow stripe across it. And he looks back up to me and he goes, you sure you haven't heard of anybody by that description? As I'm standing in front of him with that exact shirt on. And I look at him and I'm like, I don't know who that could be for sure. I don't know nothing about that.
Oh, no.
So
the time we broke into the governor's
report by description, not by name.
Yeah, that also reminds me of the story. Like when we were in Colonial Williamsburg, we broke into the governor's mansion to go run to the mayor.
You muted yourself, Alan. Can't hear you.
Did I? Hello? How about now? Hello? Hello? Nothing? Hold on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me? Hold on. I'm going to try to reach your power couplings.
Oh, Alan left and he's coming back. Oh, you guys can hear both of us.
All right. Now? Working? Yes, no? Everybody can hear. Yeah, so they can hear us. They can hear me. You can't hear me. It's you. It's all on
can't
you.
Can't hear anything.
Huh. Do. It's on your side. It's you. Headphones go bad? Technical difficulties brought to you by the Will Reads. Okay, he's going to leave and come back, I guess, and try again. It's weird. So, hi, guys. I'm big now. I got to add it back in. Should I add it back in, guys? How about now? Yes? No? Nothing? Nothing?
I've got nothing.
Oh. Yeah, headphones went bad. Headphones, I guess. Welcome to Technical Difficulties on the Will Reads. I can't hear me.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, you can hear me now.
Yep.
What happened?
I just started unplugging things, then plugging them back in, and then eventually I heard stuff.
Okay, now we cannot hear Ian.
Muted.
What? Well, oh, you were muted.
Okay. I should now.
Okay. I think we're good.
I never hit the mute button in this process.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. We don't know. We started unplugging things.
What was it, Ian? It was me.
Yeah, probably. It was Ian. No, but I'll say it reminded me of the time when we were in Williamsburg and we broke into the governor's mansion and we went to the maze to light off mortars and we left the maze and the cops rolled up on us like with the quickness because we just lit fireworks off.
And we were like right there, right out front.
We were right there out front and all the cops like surrounded us and Ian quick on his feet was like, God, cops, did you see those fireworks over there? We just saw some guys running and they just like immediately got back in the squad cars and took off. And we're like,
it was perfect.
Sweet, that worked. Naked maze running. Yes, that happened too. So how'd you know?
With a broken foot. It was
how'd you know? Yeah, naked maze running. That's fun. Anyway, that's a tradition in Williamsburg. If you ever want to know, there is a Hedgegrove maze in the governor's mansion in Colonial Williamsburg. At nighttime, it is a tradition to break in and go run through the maze.
And it sounds bad, but breaking in isn't that.
It's not. You jump over a wall. You hop over a wall and just go run through it. You don't break anything. Every once in a while, the cops show up. It's not that big of a deal. If they catch you, it's not even. They just like, don't do it again, guys. Slap you on the wrist.
Yeah. Although who knows nowadays, everybody everywhere is cracking down on stuff. So we're not suggesting you go try it. This was 20 years ago.
Yeah. This was a long time ago.
So things might've changed.
It might've.
But it was no big deal back then.
Back then we used to do it all the time. I don't know how many times I've gone and run through that maze at night. I think it's more just capitalism. It's fine. It's just to pay to go into the maze.
Yeah.
They want that money. I don't know. So, Loyal's like, I'm out of here. It's the guy over there. Go run over there. Carlden demands that the Aes Sedai tell him what's happened to Rand, whether he's sane, tell about his friends. Spitzer tells Carlden that Rand is sane, but he's left the Sun Palace because there's been an attempt to kill him. And Loyal is insisting that he and Carlden must go find Rand, you know.
When
they're doing that, that's when the young servant woman runs in saying Dobrin's been murdered. He's been murdered.
Knowing that the Aes Sedai are there, she was just coming in to spread the gossip to the kitchen help.
Yeah.
And realizes the Aes Sedai. Now, so the Aes Sedai, rightly so, did the whole, calm down, woman. Let's stick with facts. Do you know that he's dead? Oh, yes, I know. How do you know? Well, somebody, and then, they mentioned to their friend who, I heard there was a lot of blood.
Yeah.
But you don't know. Okay, let's go find out the facts.
Yeah. So they immediately go to Dobrin's apartments to see what happened. In fact, you do see him there, and there's a lot of blood. And
yeah, but he's dead like Moraine. Like, he's not dead. He's coming back.
Yeah, yeah. So he's lying motionless in his room, apparently dead. There's two dead servants, and Sumitsu.
He's mostly dead.
He's mostly dead. Starts thinking about how she's the most powerful healer ever.
No vanity in this moment.
No, none at all. Katsumi even told her that.
oh well, that's the seal of approval you're looking for. Katsumi might be the evilest of all the Forsaken. We don't know.
Yep. Yeah. Lots of blood.
Yep.
A lot of shit happens in Prologue. Yeah, a lot of shit does happen. So she
goes to this thing. So she talks to Ashman about, hey, are you familiar with that type of healing where you kind of use all the bits? And he's like, nah, man. And oh, and she even asked if you know Finn. He was like, never heard of him.
Yeah.
Or Flynn or whatever his name was. Fine. But her concern is the way she heals, and she gets into it. It's like she doesn't heal one specific thing. Like, she heals everything about him. And since we know it takes a certain amount of energy from the person getting healed, the danger in healing somebody with injuries like this is that the energy it takes from them to heal them could be enough to also kill them. Right. So you got to kind of walk that fine line. Right. So, and she does, she goes through and she does some, and then stops and, you know, he kind of sits up and then passes back out. She does some more. At first, when she first let go, I was like, oh fuck, she killed him. Mm-hmm. But no, she like kind of checked him again and was like, okay, I've got him now healed up enough that with another effort, you know, we can go back in and do a little bit more and he'll be fine.
Well, she got to the point where she's like, this is all I can do for now. He'll survive.
Right.
Now he just, get a reader similar to, I guess, a wisdom. Give him some honey water, but find a wisdom that can give him some herbs, because at this point that'll do the trick. He'll get better over time.
Some herb.
And meanwhile, Carly finds a note that looks like it's been forged or written by Dobre.
Oh, did we mention there's a power struggle between the Aes Sedai? Big surprise.
Yeah.
So when they go in the room, the one tells the yellow, like, quick, go see if you can heal him. And as she's going to do it, she's like, that bitch just told me what to do. I don't work for her, but I am working for her. Oh, no. So there's that.
There's that going on.
Didn't want to skip that important bit.
Yeah. And it's the letter from Dobrain that they find that seems it's in his handwriting, but definitely seems forged. Not something they conclude that it's forged, because it's not something he would write.
Or would he? It's one of those moments where it's like they have to act now because time is of the essence, but he's still unconscious and not talking. And then eventually he's going to wake up and be like, it was the man in the funny looking hair.
It's the gray man.
And he'd be like, oh, we didn't even think of that.
Yeah. And they think the person that attacked Dobrain must have been there to steal something, but
some things.
Some things. Yeah. At this point, Rosera Medano arrives and announces to Sumitsu that a party of Aes Sedai have arrived in the city with Loghain, who is an Ashaman, of course. So Loghain's there. And
there's much rejoicing.
Much rejoicing.
Yeah.
Yay. That's how we end this prologue. This massive prologue that has a lot of short little sections about a lot of different people and kind of maybe set up some things, but like not a lot happening. I don't know.
If there's anybody out there that truly loves it, or like, let's say there's some big payoff for stuff in here that I didn't get to and dig into.
If anybody loves Crossroad Twilight, let me give this disclaimer right now for anyone listening to our podcast. I do not like this book. So I am sorry. Maybe we find someone else to host this podcast for this book. But
there was nothing about this so far that I hated. I mean, you heard a couple things with the writing where I was like, I'd have done that different. But this was a lot.
I don't hate the book. It's just like I've actually skipped it before on a reread.
Because
I know what happens.
So you can do without it.
Well, no, because you have to know what happens. You have to get the information from the book.
Okay.
If you already know the information.
We're going
to
get
you don't need it. You don't need a good if that makes sense. So we're still going to do it. It is what it is.
Here we are.
Here we are. Anything else from this whole entire section, the prologue? Anything from the prologue that you want, that we missed or that you want to talk about that really, really struck you as something that is worth talking about?
Yeah, but I don't remember.
I'm surprised.
It would have been worth it for me to actually take a couple notes on this one because there were so many points of view. I did have some more good thoughts, but I don't remember what they were.
Yeah, and I guess it's different because there are different like sections of the Wheel of Time that have lots of different point of views. And when there's constant action going on, I enjoy that. When it's constant, just I don't know.
Some of these, we just got a reminder of where the characters are at.
Yeah.
Some of these, there was a little bit of new plotting and okay, it might go this direction.
Yeah.
But there were sections of this where there's really no movement.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You got to rehash some of it to keep telling the story.
And I'll admit, I glaze over when you get to the name salad of all the different names. It's just like, because I can't pronounce half of them. And two, there's a lot of names.
Yeah. I did enjoy Loyal trying to pretend he wasn't loyal. And then when they got caught, so the Ashaman's trying to be like, screw you, Aes Sedai. But Loyal's still like, they're Aes Sedai. We should kind of be cool with these cats.
Maybe a little bit. Yeah. Cool.
Loyal's always fun.
Yeah.
Favorite character is still going to be Bashir's wife. That was the highlight of this whole prologue. Just how casually she told her husband, hey, no biggie. Some people thought they'd come in here and get me, so I muffed them up. Like that was.
Yeah.
And what's her name?
Who's?
Bashir's wife.
Deidre.
Yeah. So she gets it. Favorite character for sure. She was awesome.
Awesome.
And Gawain.
Let's see. Who is my favorite character from the section? I'm going to pick one this time. It's not going to be Talmanis. I will not say Talmanis. I don't know.
Well, what about the yellow that actually healed Dobraine?
Yeah, I guess. Symmetra. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, some of her drama points with the other Aes Sedai was annoying, but she did some cool stuff.
You cure for being don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Yeah, that's my favorite.
There you go.
Yeah, prologues are generally check-ins with side plots. Yes and no. Some of them, yes. Some of the prologues are very much check-ins. Some of the prologues are really fantastic.
Yeah.
So this is one of those ones that I'm like, I can. Yeah, I guess they're set up a lot of stuff, so that's fine. Next week, purpose. We'll be doing two chapters. Chapter 1 and 2. Yeah. So that'll be hopefully on Monday. Hopefully back on Monday. And then the following week we'll be recording on a Tuesday, which happens to be on April 2nd.
Oh boy.
And make sure
my anniversary.
Make sure you save that date.
Remember that, Alan? That's my anniversary.
Is it?
Of my first wedding.
Is it?
My first marriage.
You mean first.
You don't remember? Yeah.
I do remember.
I'm not going to say details, but
I remember that we showed up at Schooner's. You're like, yeah, I got married today. I was like, what? So April 2nd is my birthday, guys. In case you guys didn't know. And I remember that because we showed up to Schooner's and he's like, yeah, I got married today. I was like, you got married on my birthday?
42.
Yep. 42.
Alan is the meaning of life.
I am the meaning of life. First question mark. It's a long story. We're not sharing it here. it's for patrons only. We'll talk about that. Well, if you want to talk about it offline, we're happy to talk about it sometime.
Bring it up at JordaCon.
Bring up JordaCon.
I'll mention it. I don't regret it or anything. It's, you know. I think about it. Had I gone to sail around the world.
Yeah.
And she came as well.
Yeah.
I think we'd have wrote it out.
She has kids now, doesn't she?
Yeah, I know she got married and we lost touch after that.
Yeah. I haven't talked to her in years.
But she's just a cool, down to earth.
Yeah.
She's a cool person.
Cool. Yeah. two chapters, Time to Be Gone and Two Captains. Not one. Two captains.
If you're going to write a book that's not your best and your first chapter is called Time to Be Gone, I mean, you're just setting yourself up there. It's right off the bat. You don't want to read this, you chapter don't. One. What's the name of the second chapter?
Two Captains.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I have no guesses.
Cool. Sounds good. So, yeah. So make sure you tune in next week and definitely on April 2nd, even though it might not be the best episode, it's going to be the best episode.
I'm sure to have about Alan's
first marriage. Yes. Yes. I was. I
have, no, we're talking about my first marriage.
Yeah. Talking about Ian's first marriage. Yes.
Hey. It was a doozy.
There's many of marriages. just like weddings. They're fun. So yeah, that's all I got for this week. So How We Get Found is at thewordreads.com. Find links to all the cool stuff. Find links to a cool things like Discord and Patreon and our cool merchandise. You can get frosty mugs and shot glasses so you can drink some whiskey. I don't recommend shooting this whiskey, but you know, hey, get tumblers and you can sip out of those. All that fun stuff, stickers. Fun stuff. So go check out the merch. Also, yeah, Patreon. If you want to support us, it's a great way to do it. We'd love you for it if you do. We'll give you a shout out and maybe more depending on your level. And we have to pick a chapter. Maybe we'll ask our Discord patron section what chapter they want us to do a live reaction to.
I'm hoping there's a good one or two here.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Yeah, and if you scroll down to the very bottom, like I said, of that website, you can find links to all cool stuff and get that 69 going. 69 Ayo. Off. Hey, get some NordVPNs going on. It's more important these days than now than ever. Hey, I heard they're going to ban TikTok. Guess how you can still watch TikTok? VPNs. I don't know if they're going to ban that too. But but the government can't track the VPNs. They've been talking about that. They're like, we hate VPNs. Because we can't control the people with VPNs. You can be wherever you want to be with a VPN. You don't have to be in America, even though you're in America or wherever you are, UK, Australia, wherever you are, you could be somewhere else with a VPN, which is awesome.
If you'd rather be a bear than play 7-8-year-old flag football, NordVPN.
Go check it out. Go get the cool discount. And that's all I got for this week. So
until next time.
Peace. There you go. Okay, bye. Thank you for watching The Wheel Reads.
Until next time.
Okay, bye.
Get your Coast Guard certified life-saving device ready and strapped on.
Sure. Where are we going tonight?
What kind of strap on are you talking about?
Sure.